For our present class, remember, we are following the sequence of the church history and they should have been distributed, but I'm not sure they were. These are pages 0x pages. From Lauchs's Church History, covering the Counter-Reformation following the break caused by Protestantism. I'll ask you to read those pages, and as I was reminded, though I have to take this on faith, that even those of you who are willing to do the work, for reasons best known to those who tell me, they just don't have the time, so I'm told. I just want to be helpful. In any case, I'll give this some more thought as to whether I should be more demanding in work from you people. But I am giving you the pages to read in the church history. In general, remember for the first course, we are covering the Articles of the Creed, and while I could be giving you the questions that I have in my own book, which is coming out sometime in mid-November, in other words, the question and answer book covering the Catechism of the Catholic Church. I thought it was wiser to rather take an outline chart and cover a block of matter. And so here too, I'm giving you the material to read in church history. As soon as the sermon publication comes out with the book, which is on the Catechism, I'll ask all of you, of course, to get a copy of the book. In the meantime, we'll continue doing what we have been doing, a theme covering one article of the Creed after another, and here for today to concentrate on the spirituality of St. Vincent de Paul. There were, in the 16th and 17th centuries, literally giants, both of sanctity and of apostolic zeal, that God raised to counteract and not merely check the devastating effects of Protestantism, but to draw such great good as otherwise would never have been achieved, precisely because the evils spawned, as we may say, by the so-called Reformation took place. Over the years, I have come to both know and respect St. Vincent de Paul very deeply. for 14 years. I was in the faculty of St. John's University in Jamaica, New York, conducted by the Society of St. Vincent de Paul. What we do not finish today in class, I'll make some suggestions for your reading on your own. What I'll do is choose someone outstanding personality to illustrate that period of church history that we are concentrating on here, the Counter-Reformation. Biographically, he was born in 1581 and died in 1660, which means that he lived, well, a full life. To be exact, 79 years. Third of six children, but as you may say, of a poor peasant family. Ordained, notice, at the age of 19, then received a special degree in theology, converted to a life of greater devotion to our Lord, especially zeal for souls through a Pierre Berulle, whose spirituality Vincent de Paul followed very closely. Then, well to know, he suffered severe temptations against the faith, as did not a few other outstanding apostles. For example, St. Francis de Sales suffered such violent temptations that he was on the verge of taking his own life. So depressed was he by his own, as he believed, wicked life. Then, chaplain, almoner, yelling pastor, strange term, pastor to the galley slave, those, in other words, who are condemned, well, to run the galleys. What's a galley? Is that a steamship?
No. It's a sail and rowboat.
In any case, they have to operate with muscle, the boats. And then preacher, and gave conferences. Then, some significant events, deathbed conversion, and his galley slaves. In other words, his life was changed by witnessing some marvelous conversions as a fruit of God's grace. I thought I mentioned this today in class. Have we, by the way, in this class, either last semester or, I don't believe, this semester, have we enrolled anyone in the confraternity of the Miraculous Medal?
Last year.
How many of you have been enrolled in the confraternity of the Miraculous Medal? Now the other question, how many of you have not been enrolled in the confraternity of the Miraculous Medal? Well, I should have warned you. I'm rather ritual, but I don't have the medals. Let's make it the next time and bring your friends who have not been enrolled in the confraternity, because, like Vincent de Paul, my life too has been dotted with events which changed my life and contributed to my conversion. In my conversion as a priest. Now, some of the persons influential in Vincent de Paul's life, St. Francis de Sales, especially de Sales' book, Introduction to a Devout Life. Then, St. Jane Frances de Chantal has been a devotee of contemplation. Then, St. Louise de Marillac, in cooperating with Vincent in the formation of the Sisters of Charity. Then, Cardinal Barul. Except for Cardinal Barul, there would have been no Vincent de Paul. Then, a Marguerite de Valois. Deep spiritual influence. And then, two persons, both cardinals, Mazarin and Richelieu. Who knows where Mazarin and Richelieu are standing for their holiness? Would you know? No, they weren't. Nevertheless, they were influential in the life of Vincent de Paul. What are some of the foundations that St. Vincent de Paul was responsible for? First, he helped to reform the Benedictines, Cistercians, the Antoninians, Augustinians, and pre-monastic tensions. Over the years, in teaching on the history and spirituality of religious institutes, I have told my students that every religious order in the church's history has gone through three stages. Stage number one, fervor. Have we gone over this before? Great fervor at the beginning of a new community. Saints who are both the founder and the first members. Then in time, as the numbers increased, so also did the worldliness and then one of two things happened. This secularized community either got hold of itself and reformed or disappeared. What are we saying? We are saying that all the religious communities in the church's history have gone through these three stages. Stage one, fervor, foundation. Stage two, secularization and the need for reform. In the second stage, either the religious order was reformed, or it then disappeared. In the United States, there are on the books some 362 religious communities in existence in the United States, so recognized, as we say, canonically. Since much of my work for the last 25 years has been working with religious institutes, my Vatican superiors tell me about 100 of these 362 communities will disappear. At least by the first quarter of the next century. He won't make it. And that is why new communities are coming into existence. Vincent, therefore, did a great deal of good in reforming communities that needed, badly needed, reformation. Then he helped form, notice, he helped to form new communities like the Visitandines, the Daughters of the Cross, Religious of the Blessed Sacrament. But then, in one sense, his biggest achievement, he founded two religious families, one of men, one of women. The men, either Vincentians, which is one name they're called by, or the Congregation of the Mission, another name. Founded in 1633 for religious instruction of the peasants, for giving conferences to clergy, which led to the foundation of seminaries, and for missionary work in evangelization. Who knows of one seminary in the United States which is conducted by the Vincentian Fathers? Kenrick Seminary in St. Louis. In any case, over now more than 300 years, they have been the trainers, as we may call them, of thousands of priests. Then he founded for women the Daughters of Charity, along with St. Louise de Marillac. Notice, ...1633... and then Elizabeth Seton, one of his progeny, as we may call it, founded her branch of the Daughters of Charity in 1809. Except for Winston de Paul, there would not have been an Elizabeth Seton. And then he formed what we call the Ladies of Charity, which became the Confederation of Charity. And as a diocesan community, that's what DC stands for. Now, what is most important before we get into the features of his charism is what he did to religious life. comes in 6 points. His followers took what we call simple vows. As I'm sure you know, in the Catholic Church now, we have for almost 400 years. There have been two kinds of religious institutes. By the way, wouldn't mind passing around the box for putting questions, comments, or objections. There have been, therefore, in the church, two kinds of religious institutes. One taking simple vows, the other taking what we call solemn vows. What's the difference? For 1,500 years, the only kind of religious institutes known in the church were those that took solemn vows. Thus, the Dominicans, the Franciscans, the Benedictines, the Premonstratensians, retentions, the Cistercians, and so on. Solemn vows have always been understood, as the very name implies, to be a strict form of vow. Part of the solemn vows has especially two important provisions. Those who took a solemn vow of chastity for the first 1,500 years of the church's history, they could not get a dispensation. The church did not give a dispensation from the solemn vows. And that was especially, you might say, demanding for the solemn vow of chastity, because the solemn vow of chastity invalidated attempted marriage. The other major effect of a solemn vow was that solemn vows, where it touched on poverty, always meant dispossession. The one who took a solemn vow of poverty did not merely vow not to use anything of material value without permission, which is assumed, but the one with a solemn vow of poverty did not own anything. Then came Vincent de Paul. Vincent de Paul revolutionized, as we may say, religious life, especially in two dramatic ways. For the first time in the church's history, he founded a religious institute of women, a bona fide religious community. That was approved by the Holy See, but engaged in apostolic work outside of the monastery. In other words, for 15 centuries, all religious women, as we would call them now, were contemplatives. They lived the monastic life. And even St. Francis de Sales, in following the visitation order, unlike Vincent de Paul, Francis de Sales did not succeed in founding a religious community of women that would be really engaged in active apostolic work. Vincent de Paul did. So that when Vincent de Paul began for the first time in the history of the Catholic Church, began religious communities of women under vow, but engaged in apostolic work, which was not monastic or contemplative living. And then, secondly, the vows that Vincent de Paul got Rome to allow his religious to take were not solemn vows, but simple vows. And without going into other details, basically, the simple vow of poverty allowed a religious to still own property, not to use it, mind you, not to use it independently of superiors. But nevertheless, poverty could be owned. That's the simple vow of poverty. And also a simple vow of chastity. If a religious woman, without having been dispensed from the vows, attempted marriage, it would be a sin to do so. But the marriage would be illicit, but valid. Okay? In any case, except for St. Vincent de Paul, the more than one million religious women, as we call them, in the Catholic Church would not exist. Because he was the one who first broke the ice, as you may say, and organized women as religious under vow, but engaged in active apostolic work and not taking a solemn vow of poverty, of dispossession. I could read more, but I want to get into the features of incendiary charism. I should add this. Could I have somebody's clock that I could borrow, please? Could I borrow somebody's watch, please? Thank you.
Can you see it clearly?
For the first time since St. Vincent de Paul, the Second Vatican Council has decided to gradually restore religious life to the condition in which he was before the rise of Protestantism. One of the worst effects of Protestantism was to annihilate religious life in many countries. And one of the worst effects of the revolution to which the church is passing now, and my friends, it's a revolution. It is a revolution. Most Catholics is just as well. Not only the slightest tip of the iceberg of what's really going on. Thank God. Well, one of the worst effects of the present revolution in the Catholic Church has been the widespread breakdown of religious life. My own beloved community, Society of Jesus, as I never tire telling audiences, we've lost over 15,000 Jesuits since the Second Vatican Council. Well, the Second Vatican Council has done, and it is now being implemented, is to restore religious life to the condition that it had, not just, as you might say, to its condition before Vatican II, but to its condition before the break in the 16th century. And that is why this month's Synod on religious life in Rome is, as we say in Rome, molto, molto importante. Yeah. The future of the church in whole nations depends on the decisions being made in Rome right now. Now, some features of St. Vincent de Paul's charism. First, loyalty to the Pope. I cannot tell you how crucial this is. It is not a pious cliché. In times of crisis, like our own, or Vincent de Paul's time, the crisis, in many ways, is a crisis of obedience to the papacy. And consequently, anyone who wants to reform the church must, and the verb is must, be loyal to the Pope and hear it, whether the Pope is a saint or not. Do you hear me? And one of the hardest things for so many Catholics, how well I know, is remain loyal to the church, including loyal to the Vicar of Christ. And so many churchmen are not, what a safe statement, are not canonizable saints. Like some time ago, I just had to talk to a bishop, some business, which he had to attend to. I had his private number, called the office, he was out. Called his private residence, he was out. I called again, he was out. After 3 days, and I was getting the housekeeper, where is the bishop? Now, she didn't have to tell me, but I guess I used such a language that finally she broke down. He's playing golf. 3 days on the golf course. Now, a certain amount of golf, I think, is good even for saints. You know what I'm talking about. Mr. DePaul realized that popes can be very human, but they are vicars of Christ. And he would not make a move. That's Mr. DePaul with a papal backing and approbation. Secondly, frequent Holy Communion. This is so important. I could spend, I'm not exaggerating, 3 hours. 3 hours. No break. Oh, what Vincent de Paul did to reform the church in his day by getting faithful Catholics to go to Mass and receive communion during the week. Vincent writes, remember, this was the age of Jansenism. And Jansenius was a Frenchman, like Vincent was a Frenchman. According to Jansenius, communion is a reward for virtue. Vincent, this is his writings to his own Vincentian priests. He said, I know there are nuns in France who hear it, make their first communion on their deathbed. Do you hear me? Communion was a reward for virtue. Again, human freedom cooperating with divine grace. You might say it's almost a picture of St. Ignatius, with Ignatian stress on freedom of the will. And remember, the great heresy, and it was a terrible heresy, that plagued France for generations, was this Jansenism. At one point, 50 dioceses, there weren't many more left in France. 50 dioceses in France were all Jansenists. All the bishops were Jansenists. And of course, at the heart of Jansenism is the denial of a free will. For Jansenius, some people are predestined to heaven and others for hell. Number four, faith as a virtue of the mind that must be developed. That's Vincent. Let me tell you, if I talk from now until the same day in 1995, and this, how this needs to be said, the great need for seminary training of our priests. What is that? That you not just memorize a few, well, statements of faith, but that you understand, you grasp the meaning of what you believe. That's Vincent de Paul. Those are his norms for priestly training. And how that is needed today, dear Lord, dear Lord. What I hear is both from priests and about priests, good men, but just untrained. And I must have said this 100 times in public. My Vatican superiors tell me, and shamelessly I keep repeating it, most of your priests in the United States, ordained since Vatican II, should be re-educated. Amen. Amen. Well-intentioned. Good men morally. But their minds just not developed. When you see the books they're using in their seminaries, you want to weep. Number 5, careful prudence in planning apostolic work. Vincent got a bad reputation because among his contemporaries, he was too slow. There was so much to be done. And he'd think it over. Then, not yet, let's think it over. He consults some more. Think it over again. When are we going to get going? Not so fast. Not so fast. It's 3 months since we started this project. At any rate, careful planning. And I can tell you, in our own day, so many people work impulsively. They get an idea, and before you know it, the idea is being carried into practice. For me, the classic is the multi-billion-dollar unfinished subway in New York City. Unfinished, may never be completed. They just never thought it through. That's not Vincent. Now, mind you, this is not the unwillingness to carry through, but you plan. In other words, prudence is at the very heart of sanctity. That's Vincent de Paul. 6. Regular daily examines. Vincent de Paul was shaped very much by St. Ignatius. Examine your conscience. And not just once a day, but even twice a day. Number 7, practicality in one's life. In other words, be concerned about detail, not because a person is finicky, but rather because our own minds tend, most human minds tend to jump to conclusions, and the more eager we are to do something, the more we are liable to jump to a conclusion, for the mind has thought a project through. Number 8, distrust of self. Again, this is Vincent. And God allows us to make mistakes, make fools of ourselves, do things we shouldn't do, so as to teach us, look, I made this mistake in the past.